I bow to Master in each one of you. Please sit down. Okay. It's a joy to see you here. It's a joy to be here. In India, the question has been asked from ancient times, why did God create the universe? And the classic answer has been that he might enjoy himself through many. And you see the suffering, you see the bitterness, and you see the darkness in people's eyes, and you wonder, what is he talking about? Is he a sadist? There's not much joy in people's lives. But when you saw the people today singing, when you see Mantra Devi and Krishna Das and other people of Ananda in that presentation of Ananda Worldwide, this gives you an example that everybody in the world is longing for that. He can be the worst mafioso, but what he really wants is bliss, and he just doesn't know it. And when people can begin to come out into that light and to understand that, yes, joy is the reality of life, you see it in their faces. You just feel like embracing them all in God. And yet, another absolutely wonderful thing is this, that Master said every atom is dowered with individuality, that divine bliss is expressed particularly in every human being in the universe. This is an inconceivable thought. But God is center everywhere, circumference nowhere. And everybody, his job finally, we each have a melody to sing, and someday you will learn, or maybe you're beginning to learn, your melody. And it will be a great harmony, because all these souls in God who have divine joy, it isn't all the saints have joy, all the saints have love, all the saints are humble, all the saints have godly qualities. And yet, just like a stained glass window in a church, that one sun shines with different colors through each pane. I remember, however, years ago at Mount Washington, I was working in my office. I was in my bedroom. I couldn't, because the men and the women are kept separate there. So I wasn't in the main office, but I did office work, writing letters and so on. And one day there was a big rainstorm and mud was splattered all over my window, so I could no longer look out my window, which I used to do, and enjoy the garden. And, well, I suppose if I'd been a woman, I would have done it sooner. But anyway, after two or three weeks, I finally got the time to get out there and wash that window. And I stepped back and I said, oh, what a beautiful window. And I smiled, because I realized the reason I could enjoy that window and the reason it was beautiful was because I could no longer see it. And you see, whatever beauty anybody can express is that divine presence in each one of us that seeks to express itself. And the saints and those who love God and those who are close to him in their thinking and feeling, they are the ones who are coming more and more to prove that truth, that God can enjoy himself through many. The joy that they have is the joy of God. And from the beginning of our evolution, we could be turtles, we could be worms. But you know, science says that only the brain produces consciousness. And they think that someday computers will be sophisticated enough to be conscious. In fact, people nowadays are even talking about computers' rights. Look at the humble earthworm. Nothing could be simpler than an earthworm. But if you try to prick it with a pin, it'll move away, won't it? It's perfectly conscious. Well, not perfectly, but it's conscious. And it's self-conscious. And gradually it comes up. It takes a long time to reach the human level. Yogananda used to say that it's very hard to reach the human level. Take advantage of it. Don't think that you're just sort of, you're here by accident. It's taken you a long time. The scriptures in India say that it takes 5 to 8 million lives to reach the human level. And what is the life of a diamond? I don't even know. But Yogananda said he could remember even when he was a diamond. You've been all these things coming up from the atom, every atom dowered with individuality, an incredible thing. And yet each one himself. And so what I hope to promote in my little life, and each life is very little, and yet each life is eternal. Our job is to discover that that infinite God entered this world of delusion, wandered for many incarnations like the prodigal son, and finally came to understand, oh, I know what it's all about. It's here. I have to find my own source. I have to find out who I am. And once we find that that God has expressed himself in each one of us, then we're there. This is what life's all about. And people wander and run and desperately seek that which they always carry with them. Isn't that something? You've got a portable radio, and it's your own self. And why am I here? This is a center where Master's work is well-founded. We all know that. Therefore, I have to say that there are certain basic differences. I remember saying to Dayamata in 1958, when are we going to start communities, colonies? I had had this dream since I was 15. When Master gave that talk in Beverly Hills about youths going north, south, east, and west, I vowed I would do my best. And I asked her, when are we going to do this? Her answer was, frankly, I'm not interested. Well, I am interested. I didn't want to rebel. I didn't rebel. But one thing that could never get through to them, I mean, we just had a basic difference, is that I was creative. When I came to Master after reading his book, my thought was partly my earnest longing to know God. My second thought was, this is such a good thing. It's got to be known. I wanted to spread this teaching and let everybody know it. And so I was in SRF. I was doing all sorts of things to organize this and develop that and develop the centers and develop the office and develop the monastic order and God knows what else. But always the thought of the people above me was, what's he doing so much? Can't he just wait to be told what to do? And I just am not that kind of person. I can't help it. I can't claim any credit for being an oddball. But I have this longing to reach out to people. And another thing I want is not to give people that I'm the thought that I'm here to serve them. Yes, I want to serve, but I want to get them into the act too. I want everybody to serve. I want everyone to spread this. Each one teach one, each one reach one. This is what I have come into this world to do. And I can't say it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. It's just what I am. I can't help being what I am. This is my melody. And I have come here to help people to realize, because I found that too many people have the impression that Master was an institutionalist, judgmental, strict. Somebody in Encinitas put the things on the altar, on the mantelpiece, a little different, and she was scolded by a superior. This is not the way Master wanted. Master wanted everything definite. He didn't. Well, I remember him coming into our dining room in the monks' dining room, not the nuns' dining room. It was an absolute mess. And he sat there and he said, well, it might be worse. But he was so open to everybody, each one of us as we are. And I saw him meeting people on so many different levels. It was amazing. He was each person he talked with. And Jean Benoit told me that sometimes people from San Diego who were doctors would come and talk with him. And he never studied medicine, but he could talk their language. He talked their words, their vocabulary. How he got it, I don't know. But I remember one time I was in Beverly Hills, in fact. I was invited by a Jewish group to demonstrate yoga postures for a bar mitzvah. And the Jewish psychiatrists in Beverly Hills are somewhat noted for being, let's say, skeptical. And this one got me in a corner, was asking me about my philosophy, and I was trying to explain a little bit, and I could see him sort of thinking more and more in terms of, this guy really needs my help. And then to clinch my argument, I began telling of a few miracles I'd actually seen. I could see him thinking, let's see, 10 o'clock Wednesday. I'm free then. Anyway, I could see that it had absolutely no impact. And I was, a couple of days later, I was with Master. He often would have me serve his guests and then do yoga postures afterwards. And after the guests left, and we would sit together, and we were sitting together alone at the table there, and Master looked at me, he said, by the way, when you're with atheists and materialists, don't talk about miracles. I said, you knew. He said, I know every thought you think. Now, that's an incredible statement. But I found that it was true. He did know my thoughts. Many times, he would respond to them in different ways because of a need of mine. That, well, I can't go into all those stories, but I knew that he was me as well as everybody else. He lived in our consciousness. He lived through us. And my prayer in my life, in this life, has been that he lived through me. Last night, I felt he was very much with me. And I feel he is with me now. And what I want is not to say, because he's in me, therefore you should listen to me. I have never used that argument. In building Ananda, you know, in the beginning years, there was quite a lot of opposition. People wondered, why do they have to listen to this bird? But I never pulled that card, that I was with him. I know you, don't you think you should listen to me? That's what I get from SRF all the time. I was with him more years than you. Don't you think you should? No. Jesus Christ said, the last shall be first. Everyone has a right to his own conscience and his own view of truth. Everyone. I remember saying, when SRF was beginning this lawsuit of theirs, which must have cost them $50 million, we won almost everything. But they were determined to destroy me, to muzzle me, to get Ananda off the map. They wanted to get to prevent us from using his words without their permission. You can imagine how eager they'd be to give it. From using his image. If we wanted the images of the gurus, we could have them on our private altars, but not in our churches. We couldn't use his name, his image, his likeness. We couldn't promote him. We couldn't quote him. And they were trying to force this, force the United States courts, which are, in fact, devoted to the Constitution, which gives religious liberty, but they were trying to muzzle us in the name of the law. Well, thank God, the only thing they won was something I gave them. They won because I had copied some of the tapes that I had gotten from somebody else in Rome, and they won the right to say that we didn't have the right to use those tapes. That was the only copyright they won. They lost the copyright on everything else. It enabled us to publish the autobiography. It enabled us to write the Rubaiyat, to do our edition of the Rubaiyat, the Gita, the Bible, everything. And the only thing that we couldn't do was those recordings. Well, since we didn't have them, I thought it was a worthwhile thing to give them. Yeah, we had to pay $38,000 instead of the $30 million they were demanding. And I thought that was a good enough price to pay to get them off our backs. Because they had gone for appeal after appeal, finally going all the way to the Supreme Court, which refused to listen to them. But it was no small thing. It didn't bother us, but it was certainly a trial for us. We had to come up with some $12 million to defend ourselves. And some people said, well, why do you have to fight? Well, the answer is, if we hadn't fought, we'd have lost by default. We wouldn't be here. So we had to. It was no choice of ours, but one thing we never did. We didn't talk against them. We didn't use low-down tactics. In fact, we hired an individual practitioner, sole practitioner, who didn't even have a secretary. And they hired the third largest law firm in the world. but we won. And that was the fantastic thing. So we're grateful for all that. What is the money spent if in the end we have been able to liberate Yogananda for the world? I want all of you to feel like missionaries for what you believe in. And don't wait for people to give you permission to be yourself. I know I said to Dayamata at our first legal hearing in Fresno in 1990 that when Master said self-realization fellowship, he had said that self-realization will someday be the religion of the world. I said he cannot have meant Self-Realization Fellowship, Inc. He can't have come to start a new and super Catholic church. Daya's answer was, that's your opinion. Well, yes, it is my opinion. I don't see how it can be how it can't be everybody's opinion. It's got to be. We have to begin in this age of energy to understand that God and spiritual truth cannot be monopolized by any church. We have to realize that self-realization is the answer. Every one of you has to stand on his own conscience. Every one of us in this world has to say, well, I don't understand it, and therefore I can't really accept it, but I would like to understand it. Okay, that's honorable. But to say, don't you think you ought to believe this because we tell you this? No, I reject that. That's why I was thrown out on my ear, but I'm grateful for it. Because I've been able to do the things Master himself told me to do. Now, here in Los Angeles, it's taken a certain amount of courage to come down here. This is the sort of spiritual center of his organization. I have nothing against them. I wish them well. They have never been gracious to me. But I would love to work with them if God gives me that chance. I'm not standing at the door with a begging bowl. We have a work that we have proved. I think our work may well be greater and larger than theirs is. Certainly our books are being more read in the bookstores. We have statistics on that. But apart from that, I'm not at all interested in rivalry. I want them to understand that Master is for everybody. Master loves everybody. He doesn't judge people. It might be worse. That's the way he was. He accepted us as we were because he knew that only from where we are can we grow. Don't you think you should be this way? Well, the fact is, if you aren't, then don't try to pretend that you are. Be yourself. And from that self, you can grow. You can grow. And that little acorn can become a shading oak. So I plead with you here tonight, today, that you do get behind this work here. It's a big step for us to come to Los Angeles. We don't have, we haven't had that much, what am I to say? You know what I'm trying to say, and don't want to, but there have also been more and more people down here who have come to know Ananda, have visited us, have read our books, are behind us. Somebody was up at the Mount Washington bookstores, whatever, gift shop there, and this was Lewis, I think, said this, that the lady asked him where he was from, and he said, well, he was from Ananda, and she said, oh, don't talk about these things, but his books are, everybody's reading them. And I do want people to understand that Master made sense. He didn't talk dogmatically. He didn't say, don't you think you should believe it? I'm the guru. He didn't. And I have never, in all the years that I've guided Ananda, said, don't you think you should listen to me? If sweet common reason won't win people, I don't want to use anything else. I'd rather lose. In fact, success has never been my bottom line. Doing what I felt was right has been my bottom line. And several times we were in danger of failure. Several times we had opportunities that could have helped us greatly, but they weren't right. There was one man in the beginning, I think it was in 1969, who came to me. He said, I've just inherited a lot of money and I'm sort of wondering if I should live here at Ananda or go to India. Well, my reasoning was that if he had asked that question, it meant that he wasn't fully committed to coming to Ananda. And so I said, I think you should go to India. But first I asked him, how much money have you inherited? He said, $200,000. That's like saying $1 million today. Surely it would have helped us. We could have built a lot with that kind of money, but I wasn't even tempted. I said, I think you should go to India. And that's what he did. That's fine. We had a fire. And they discovered that the cause of that fire was a faulty spark arrestor on a county vehicle. Our neighbors were all eagerly telephoning us, we can sue the county and get all the money back that we lost in our homes. And I felt, no, this is not the right thing to do. Why should I take my bad luck, our bad luck, out on our neighbors? So I wrote the county supervisors and I said, I know you're a little concerned about us because we were the biggest losers, but I want you to know that we will not sue. I'm sure they waited for the other shoe to fall, but it never did. We have always abided by this truth. And when it looked as if we would even fail, I have felt that our failure or success is secondary. Doing God's will is what we're here to do. And if we fail, then that's God's will. And we're not going to fight that. We'll do our best, yes, but after that, leave the results in His hands. I was being raked over the coals by their lawyer. 80 hours of deposition. And I was just telling myself, they can take away everything, but they can never take away the only thing I prize, and that's my love for Divine Mother. And so it has turned out. We have been benefited by every setback. We have grown through every test. And I want you all to feel, because I really do believe that there is a battle going on in heaven between the Asuras and the Devas, the angels and the demons. I believe that we are in a time of great crisis. I sincerely believe, and I don't want to offer this as an incentive, but let's face it, it is certainly a reality, that I believe, first of all, that there will be a massive depression. Master said it would be much worse than the 30s. In India, it said, I read a prophecy there that said of me, that in his country, when there will be weeping in every home, he will be a major cause for its upliftment. I hope I am. I hope I can be. Because, yes, I think a terrible depression is coming, but what better insurance? And this is what I don't want to press, and yet it is insurance. When people stand together, it's sort of like that old man who was dying. He had six stalwart sons. He said, bring me seven sticks. And he took one stick, and old as he was and feeble as he was able to break it. Then he took those six sticks and gave it to the strongest of these young men and said, try to break them together. And even with all his strength, he wasn't able to do it. He said, my sons, remember this. If you stick together, no one will be able to break you. If you can join with other people, if you can share with other people, God, Master, although Daya said, frankly, I'm not interested, the fact is that in every public talk, Master urged people to start communities. And it could not have been meant as monasteries. Another thing she said was that Master came to the West to start monasteries. Well, that's not true. This is the age, that's why Lahiri Maharsha came as a householder. This is the age when householders can be devotees. And at Ananda, we have proved that because we have householders, we have children, we have schools, and these children are coming up into our way of life and have joined us. And it's absolutely wonderful. In a group of several hundred people, you just never hear a loud or unkind word. You never see people getting angry. Look at the soaps on the afternoon TV. Every one of them, somebody's shouting at somebody and hitting somebody. And people talk about family. How many family? The brother sues the brother. The children sue the parents. It's just appalling. A true family, Jesus put it this way. He said, who is my mother and father and brother and sister save him who loves God? When you are with people who love God and you can love God together, isn't it wonderful? Yes, Since I'm asking the question, I should answer it. Yes, it is. It is. When you find, because everybody has his downs, everybody goes through his tests, everybody has certain difficulties. But how wonderful it is when you're with people who try to help you instead of push you down further. This is what Ananda is. Ananda is truly a cooperative community, not just in work, but in emotional life, ups and downs, in helping each other, in rooting for each other. We all want the best from others. There's none of this slandering and criticizing and backbiting. You find kindness there. And this is what I want more than anything else. Why can't people be kind? They're happier when they're kind. There's no reason to be unkind. This is, I mean, it makes you feel so dirty when you're unkind. And so clean when you love everybody. And seeing God in this choir. And seeing so many different expressions of that joy in each one. You just have to love every one of them. And again, with this attitude, when you walk down the streets and you see people with suffering faces, grim faces, bitter faces, you just want to inject a little serum of joy. Each one of them has that potential. Nobody can be defined by his bitterness or anger or hatred. All of us have to be defined by our true nature, which is bliss. So do get behind this work if you can. Do what you can for it, but I hope we can build a really big thing here. I want the world to know that Master was a master of love, of compassion, of joy, of tolerance, not intolerance, not of institutionalism, but of self-realization. He was to each person his own dearest friend. I would see that in his eyes. I would see it in his comportment. Help others to feel that by being that yourselves. Thank you for coming, and God bless you.